The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling one of those psychology experiments pretty much everyone has heard of, the marshmallow test.
Mm-hmm. Famous stuff?
Yeah, but maybe misunderstood too. We're diving into the original research and the really important book, The Marshmallow Test, Mastering Self-Control by Walter Mischel.
That's right.
You know the basic story, right? A kid, a marshmallow, wait or eat it now, and somehow that predicts, like, everything.
Well, that's the pop version.
Exactly. But Mischel's actual findings, what he spent his life on, it's much richer and, frankly, way more optimistic than that headline suggests.
Totally agree. Our goal today is really to get into the weeds, unpack the real science behind self-control and delayed gratification.
And why does this matter so much right now?
Well, look around us. We're swimming in instant gratification, aren't we? Everything's a click away, a notification.
Oh, yeah. The dopamine hits are constant.
Right. So the ability to actually pause, to manage that immediate urge and, you know, stick to longer term goals, health, finances, whatever that skill is, maybe more than ever, fundamental for a good life.
So it boils down to Mischel's big question. Is willpower something you're just, like, born with, fixed?
Is it a skill, something you can actually learn and get better at?
Let's talk about the man behind the test first. Walter Mischel. He passed away in 2018, but he was, I mean, a real giant in psychology. Stanford, Columbia.
Absolutely. And what makes his view so crucial is that he was the guy running the show. He designed and started the marshmallow test way back, late 60s, I think, at Stanford's Bing Nursery School.
Right.
But the truly remarkable part, his commitment, he didn't just run the test and publish. He followed those same kids.
For how long?
For 50 years, five decades. Track them right into adulthood. That longitudinal aspect, that's the gold mine.
Wow, 50 years. That level of dedication is incredible.
It really is. And it's why his work ended up challenging some really core ideas about personality.
Like the idea that we're just stuck with certain traits.
Exactly. He moved away from that static view towards something more dynamic, how we interact with situations, the strategies we use. That became key.
Which leads us nicely into the book itself. What's the main takeaway Mischel wanted us to get?
The core message is incredibly empowering, really. It's that self-control isn't some fixed trait you either have or you don't. It's a cognitive skill, a set of strategies you can learn.
So it's learnable.
Entirely learnable. The book is basically the manual, the how-to guide based on decades of evidence. It's not about just gritting your teeth and resisting. It's about being smart about it.
Okay, so the book tackles that feeling we all know, right? That internal tug of war. You know you should skip the dessert or save the money or get off the couch.
Uh-huh. The immediate pleasure versus the long-term goal.
Yeah. And the immediate thing often wins. Mischel's answer isn't just try harder, though. It's different.
It's about strategy. Using mental tricks, essentially, to reshape the battlefield in your mind. You don't fight the impulse head-on so much as you outsmart it.
And how do we outsmart it? What's the mechanism?
This is where his key idea comes in. The hot and cool system. That's the framework.
Hot and cool.
Yeah. Yep. He basically says the art of mastering self-control boils down to learning how to cool the now and heat the later.
Cool the now, heat the later. Explain that.
You need to make the immediate temptation less appealing, less emotionally charged, that's cooling the now. And at the same time, you need to make the future reward feel more real, more desirable, more present in your mind, that's heating the later.
Okay, that makes intuitive sense. So let's get specific. Talk us through the original experiment again. The setup was pretty simple, wasn't it?
Deceptively simple. You've got a young child, maybe 4 years old, alone in a room.
Okay.
In front of them, there's a treat they really like, a marshmallow, maybe a cookie or pretzel.
The temptation.
Exactly. And the researcher says, I have to leave for a bit. You can eat this one treat right now if you want. But if you can wait until I come back, without eating it, you'll get two treats.
One now or two later. The classic delay of gratification test.
Precisely. And then the researcher leaves the child alone with the treat for about 15 minutes.
What I loved reading about was what the kids who succeeded actually did during that waiting time. They weren't just staring stoically ahead.
Oh, definitely not. That's the fascinating part. They were actively deploying strategies. Covering their eyes, singing little songs, talking to themselves like, if I wait, I get two.
Right. Some even kick the table or push the marshmallow away, physically distance themselves.
Yes. All these little coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
And those active strategies, the singing, the looking away, the self-talk, That's what turned out to be predictive.
Predictive of what exactly? This is where the longitudinal stuff comes in.
Right. When Mitchell and his team followed up decades later, the correlations were, well, frankly, astonishing.
Mm.
The kids who managed to wait longer, the high delayers, showed significant advantages later in life.
What sort of advantages are we talking?
Okay, get this. Significantly higher SAT scores.
Mm.
We're talking potentially 200 points higher on average compared to the low delayers.
Wow, 200 points. That's huge.
It is. But also better social skills. They can handle stress more effectively. They generally had lower body mass index, less likelihood of substance abuse problems as adults.
That's a wide range of positive outcomes.
It is. Now, Mitchell was always careful to emphasize these are correlations, not direct causation.
Right.
Right. Waiting for the marshmallow didn't magically cause higher SAT scores.
Yeah.
But it showed that the underlying skills, the ability to regulate impulse, to deploy those cognitive strategies early on, those skills, had powerful predictive value for later success and well-being.
Okay, so if it's about skills, not just innate willpower, let's go back to that hot, cool system.
Yeah.
How does that actually explain what those successful kids were doing?
Right. Think of it like two different parts of your brain, sort of competing for control. You've got the hot system.
Okay.
This is the fast, emotional, impulsive part, like a demanding toddler. It sees the marshmallow and just yells, "Go, eat, now!" It's driven by the amygdala, deep in the limbic system.
Primal stuff.
Very primal. And it tends to dominate when we're stressed, tired, or feeling overwhelmed.
Makes sense. So what's the cool system?
The cool system is your rational cognitive self. Think prefrontal cortex, the planning, reasoning, consequence considering part of the brain.
The adult in the room.
Sort of, yeah. It's slower, more reflective, more strategic. It says, hang on, what happens if I wait? What's the bigger picture? It helps you know instead of just go.
So the goal isn't to, like, kill the hot system.
No, not at all. You can't, really.
Yeah.
The goal is to learn how to activate the cool system strategically so it can regulate or override the hot system's immediate impulses when needed.
Okay, that sounds great in theory. But, you know, when I'm actually standing in front of the fridge late at night or scrolling endlessly, how do I actually make that switch? How do I engage the cool system on demand? Did Mitchell offer practical ways?
Absolutely. That's the core of the book's practical advice. He identifies several key cognitive strategies. Probably the most powerful one is cognitive reappraisal.
So rethinking it.
Exactly. You actively change how you think about the tempting thing. You change its mental representation.
So for the marshmallow, instead of, ooh, sweet, chewy goodness,
you reframe it. You might imagine it as a puffy white cloud, abstract, non-edible, or maybe a squishy cotton ball.
Mm-hmm.
Or even picture it covered in something gross.
Ah, okay. So you drain the hot emotional charge out of it by changing how you see it in your mind's eye.
Precisely. You cool it down mentally. Suddenly the power isn't in the marshmallow itself. It's in how you are choosing to perceive it. That gives you control back.
That feels really powerful, actually. Just shifting the mental frame.
It is. Another maybe simpler strategy is attentional control.
Just looking away.
Pretty much.
Mm.
The kids who literally covered their eyes or turned their chairs around or focused on singing a song, they were actively directing their attention away from the hot stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
Out of sight, out of mind. Or at least out of the hot system's immediate grip.
Makes sense. Distraction works.
Simple, but effective. And then there's one more strategy that's incredibly useful, especially for us adults trying to build habits.
Okay.
It's the if-then implementation plan. Mitchell found this to be remarkably effective.
If, then, how does that work?
You basically pre-decide your response to a trigger. You automate your cool system strategy before you're in the heat of the moment.
So you make a plan.
A very specific plan. Like, if I feel the urge to check social media while working, then I will immediately take 3 deep breaths and write down the task I'm supposed to be doing.
Ah, okay. Or if I'm offered dessert after dinner, then I will immediately ask for a cup of tea instead.
Exactly. You take the decision-making and the willpower struggle out of the moment of temptation. You've already decided the cool course of action. Your brain just executes the preloaded plan. It bypasses that whole hot, cool battle.
That seems incredibly practical, like you're programming yourself for success.
That's a good way to put it. It reduces the cognitive load right when you're most vulnerable.
Mitchell really had a knack for boiling these complex ideas down, didn't he? The quotes from the book are quite memorable.
He did. That central idea we talked about. The key is to cool the now and heat the later. That captures the balancing act perfectly.
Yeah, that's a good one. And what about the message for people who, you know, feel like they wouldn't have passed the test as kids? that they're just not good at self-control.
Well, that's where this quote is so important.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "The marshmallow test is not a test of a child's destiny. It is a measure of how well, at that moment, they are able to use a set of cognitive skills. And these skills are eminently teachable."
Eminently teachable. That's the hope, right?
Yeah.
It's not fixed.
Exactly. It's anti-fatalistic. It emphasizes neuroplasticity, the idea that our brains can change, that we can learn and improve these skills throughout life.
I love that.
And one more, really hammering home the power of reframing. If you change how you think about it, you can change what you do.
Yeah.
They demonstrated that the power is not in the stimulus, but in how it is mentally represented.
The power lies in our perception. Okay, let's bring this home. How do we take these strategies, reappraisal, attention control, if-then plans, and apply them in everyday adult life beyond just marshmallows?
Right. Let's take health, for instance. We mentioned dessert. Use cognitive reappraisal. When you see that cake, don't just think delicious treat. Actively reframe it. Okay, that's processed sugar. It's going to spike my insulin, make me feel sluggish later, contribute to long-term health issues. Turn the hot craving into a cool, rational assessment of consequences.
Or heat the later. Think about how good you'll feel tomorrow if you skip it.
Exactly. Or use an if-then plan for exercise. If my alarm goes off at 6:30 a.m., then I will immediately put on my running shoes, which I left by the bed. Removes the morning debate.
Okay, what about money? Impulse spending is a big one.
That's pure hot system activation. Reappraisal helps. Do I need this, or is it just a fleeting want? But also, environment design is huge here.
Environment design.
Yeah, basically making it harder for your hot system to win. Unsubscribe from marketing emails. Don't save your credit card details online. Create friction.
Or use a waiting period rule, like an if-then plan.
Perfect. If I want to buy something non-essential online, over $50, then I will put it in the cart, but wait 24 hours before purchasing. Often a cannot impulse just fades if you give the cool system time.
That's a good one. I could see this applying to relationships too, especially during arguments.
Oh, absolutely. When tempers flare, you're deep in the hot system. Rational thought goes out the window.
Right. You say things you regret.
Exactly. So applying Mitchell's ideas suggests using psychological distancing. Maybe agree beforehand on a cool down period. If our voices start to raise, then we will take a 20-minute break and reconvene. Let's the cool system come back online.
It seems like a core theme running through all this is being strategic and proactive rather than just relying on brute force willpower in the moment.
That's exactly it. And it links to another key message. Environment design is crucial.
We touched on that with finances.
Yeah, but it applies everywhere. It's just easier to make good choices when your environment supports them. If you want to eat healthier, don't keep junk food easily accessible in the house. If you want to focus, turn off notifications.
Reduce the number of battles you even have to fight.
Precisely. Make the desired behavior the path of least resistance. Cool down your surroundings proactively.
You know, reflecting on all this, what surprises me most isn't just the long-term predictions from the test, but the almost deceptive simplicity and power of something like the if-then plan.
Right.
It feels like such a small tweak, but it reframes the whole challenge. It's not about being a hero with infinite willpower. It's about having a clever little script ready to go. It shifts the focus from sheer effort to smart strategy.
I think that's the most profound takeaway for me, too. Mitchell showed us that self-control isn't this monolithic, mysterious force. It's a set of cognitive tools. And the real power, the real freedom, comes from learning how to use those tools effectively.
So it's less about resisting temptation and more about redirecting or reframing it.
Exactly. It's strategic. It's learnable. And ultimately, mastering these skills allows us to align our actions with our deeper values and goals rather than just being puppets of our immediate impulses. That, I think, is the foundation of personal freedom.
A really powerful message. It makes you think about all the small ways you could apply these little strategies starting today.
Mm-hmm. Small changes, big impact over time.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.